Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 179, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that gives us a little kickback and helps keep the podcast going. With me, after a week off, is my co-host Derek. What's up, Derek?
Not much, Bob. How you doing? How's everybody doing?
It's good, man. It's good to have you back. How was your little, work trip?
Yeah, it was a work trip, but it ended up being quite a bit of a vacation for me. So I was down to Greenville, South Carolina. We're closing up a warehouse down there, so I went to help with that, but we got the work done. So I ended up with a four-day weekend and just hung out, did some hiking, had a good time.
Yeah, it looked like you had a good time. I was kind of jealous. I'm the adventure guy, and you know, so it looked like you had some fun and you took some good photos and things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
But of course, the big thing going on just concluded. I guess today's the last day. Is Computex, which is for us, I would say it's so much bigger than CES. It is the for PC hardware, yeah. It is the show, especially this year with a lot of big announcements. We will get to that soon. We want to talk about our reviews and some other stuff we have going on, and then we'll jump right into Computex news. So our first review this week is probably one of the best looking M.2 drives out there. It is the WD Black SN750. This is the one with the heatsink. So we already reviewed the plain one that doesn't have a heatsink. This is the one with the heatsink, and the heatsink is made by EK. This thing, I don't even know if my photos do it justice, and I think the photos look awesome. It's such a good-looking heatsink. You know, I'm so glad that Western Digital went to EK for this, because we've seen a lot of companies just, like, put these heatsinks on, and they just, like, don't really add anything, or they're kind of just like, whatever. But this heatsink is beefy. It looks awesome. It looks like, you know, something you want to install in your system. It doesn't just look like just like some dumb heatsink that doesn't match. And it's not really flashy or anything like that. It just looks awesome, in my opinion.
Yeah, just the right angles, just the right lines. It's, you know, the fins are kind of like cut at an angle, and then they're like chromed or silver on the top. So it's just a good look. And then I think even the lettering lends itself to that. Like, it's kind of military lettering on it. And they just look clean. I like that it actually has a backing on it too. So you're going to get full thermal spread with that.
Yeah. It's a great heatsink. Now, keep in mind, you don't need this heatsink. Like, it is not needed for this drive. This drive does not overheat or anything like that. This will, of course, aid in cooling, especially if you have this installed, you know, under a graphics card or something like that. But this drive, we tested the normal one. It doesn't throttle. It doesn't get super hot or anything like that. So just keep that in mind.
But you didn't overclock it, right?
Yeah, no overclocking. But the one thing with this is that it's not going to fit in all M.2 slots, especially ones that are right by heatsinks. We ran into some issues. The heatsink on this is a bit wider than the actual M.2 specification. So you're going to run into some issues. And we did when we went to install this. You know, in our one board, it kind of got, like, we had a heatsink. The chipset heatsink was right there, and we couldn't get it installed. And then in another board, the actual PCI Express slot was in the way as well. Hmm. So they do have a list of compatible motherboards. So I would take that into consideration if you're thinking about getting this. But again, great performance. It's one of the fastest drives we tested, just like the non-heatsink version. There's no real difference either in performance. They're both going to perform the same. It's the same hardware, everything like that.
This one just looks way better.
It looks so much better. But this was on sale yesterday, but I don't believe it's even available anymore. Nope. I just checked it earlier before the podcast. But it was on sale for $209. When we reviewed it, it was $279.
Mm-hmm. That's a good deal, actually.
Yeah, it's back up to $279. It was down to $209. But the non-heatsink version is let me check it again, because we're going through prices here. Yeah, the non-heatsink version is $218, where the heatsink version is $279. It's like a $60 difference. That's a lot for a heatsink that you don't need either.
Yeah.
It is
hard to justify that much cost. And there are aftermarket options.
Yeah, EK sells, it's not identical, but it's very much the same heatsink for just under $20.
Okay.
It's a little different, but it will cool, you know, your M.2. It's a little different, but it's that's $17. And there's also other options from other manufacturers right around the same price. So $60 is a lot, I feel. That sale was amazing because it brought it right around the same price as the non-heatsink version.
It was that Gigabyte mount right in where you want it to be, price per
gigabyte. So I think that just $60 is too much. I think if you're going for a look and you want this heatsink and it's worth it to you to do it, go ahead. But you can get the regular drive for just over $200 and it's going to perform the same. It's just not going to look as good. And of course, you know, if you already have a motherboard that has integrated heatsinks, you don't need the heatsink version either.
In fact, that heatsink version probably won't fit in those cases.
Correct. Yeah.
So you'd end up having to take that shielding or armor off and probably ruin the aesthetic of it. So that's definitely something to consider as well.
Yeah, but like I said, I've seen this in a couple custom builds, and it looks amazing. It looked amazing on our board, too. It's just if you want the heatsink, and if you're willing to pay the extra money for it. Hopefully, this price will kind of at least go down. I could do a $20. Yeah, I could even do a $30 premium, honestly, because it looks so good, but $60 is just a lot.
I think, like, $19 would be prime, though. Like, right around, you know, just that pretty much the $20 mark, but call it $19. Sounds better. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that would be the prime selling point for it. But, you know, maybe they're really not getting a good deal from EK. They could. I can't imagine that EK wouldn't cut them a deal. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, but yeah. So check out that review. It's a great, like I said, it's the best M.2 out there right now, in my opinion.
Nice.
So, yeah, check that out.
That's saying something right there, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't want any RGBs on my M.2 like that. It's just the best looking one.
Yeah.
So Ryan took a look at a product that we got to see at CES earlier this year, and I was super excited about it. And it is the HyperX Quadcast, which is their standalone gaming microphone. And this thing is awesome. He really enjoyed it. We were actually gaming the other night, and he was on his gaming headset microphone, and then he switched over, and it was like night and day. It's just like,
really,
like I'm on this studio mic here, and I've switched back and forth, and it is night and day.
Yeah, you're talking the difference between a headset mic and then the Quadcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's totally. It's always noticeable when you go away from your headset mic.
Yeah, because headset mics just aren't. They're not going to compare.
No.
You know, and this mic is great. It comes on its own stand, which has the shock mount and everything built in, so you don't have to worry about that. But if you do want to mount it to an arm, you can go ahead and do that as well, and they include everything, minus the arm, of course, to do that. This is a USB microphone, so it's super easy to install, of course, for anybody. Yeah. You don't need to worry about an audio interface or anything like that. Just, you know, plug it into your computer and you're good to go. It has a really cool feature of tap to mute on the top. You just tap the top and it mutes the microphone. So if you need to take a call or talk to somebody and you don't want your buddies in your game to hear you, you can go ahead and tap that. It has gain control on the bottom, which allows you to, of course, increase or decrease the volume right there. I really like that, because so many of these mics and stuff like have a gain control like in software or something, and I like
worthless physical... when you're in game, so
yeah, exactly. He said it's not as accurate as it is, so it's something to look at, but he really enjoys this mic, and it supports a bunch of different modes, so it's not just like a mic you plug in and that's all you get. You do get different modes. You get a stereo mode, omnidirectional, cardioid, and bidirectional. With it, and we have audio samples of each one, so you can sound kind of what it sounds like. And in the audio samples, Ryan explains the difference between each one and, you know, where you would want to use those specific things as well. Nice. The mic is $130 or $140,
$139.99. It is up there.
It is up there, but I think that if you're a streamer, I mean, audio is one of the most important things. And if you're a serious gamer, I think audio is one of the most important things too. You know, you're a podcaster like we're doing here. I mean, you know,
gotta have a good mic.
Yeah, good mic is something that's really important. And like I said, it's super easy to set up. You just plug it in. There's nothing else really to do.
Yeah.
You know, Windows detects it and you're good to go. So I really like it. I love the design. And again, you can't discount that you do get a shock mount with this. A lot of other mics are on mounts, but they're not a shock mount. A shock mount makes a big difference, especially if you're running, you know, you're typing and the microphone's kind of
surface.
So that's really nice. And I do like it that they, even though it does come with its own stand, they do have the adapters so you can go ahead and put it on a boom arm, which I like too. So
yeah, that's pretty key.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, I have two things that I kind of like, I kind of dislike about this. Is it's red, and it's only red. I would have preferred this to have a couple of different color choices, because you can put a lot of time and energy into making your room look, your game room look just the way you want, especially when you're podcast or you're streaming, you know, you get that whole setup going exactly how you want it. And then you go and you throw a red color in there and it maybe doesn't match. So that's unfortunate. I would like to see a different, like RGB, of course, version, or just different colors from them in the future.
Yeah, I think that kind of has to come. And I think you make a good point, because we talked about it, I believe last week with my review of the NZXT Hue 2, or was that week
that
before?
That was the week before, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, your setup is important, and this being red, that might not match your setup.
Yeah.
It might not look the way you want it to look. So yeah, I think that, like, is, you know, talking about the color of a microphone, It might not have been a big deal a few years ago, but I think now with so many people spending so much time making their setup look perfect, it is a big deal.
Yeah,
it's not hard to install some RGB LEDs in there. I mean, it's not.
No.
You know?
Slight cost increase, but it'd probably be worth it. And if you're spending this kind of money, like, you don't want to spend this and then just screw up your whole setup, so...
Yeah,
and yeah, like, if you think about it, like, it might sound dumb to complain about this, like, oh, it's just a microphone, who cares? If you're streaming, the microphone is like next to your face. That's the biggest object on the screen.
Like, yeah.
So yeah, that should probably be like set up pretty well. So other than that, I'd like to see it with a different connection type, but that kind of goes beyond what most gamers are looking for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is obviously very PC gamer centric, you know, not messing with audio interfaces or anything like that.
Right.
But yeah, but I like it. I would love to have one. But yeah, it looks awesome.
For sure.
So definitely check out that review, and we'll move right along to Case Mod Friday. And we're not doing a Computex build because I found this. This guy has been doing very motorcycle themed builds in the past. We featured at least one of his Ducati builds,
yeah.
Maybe two of them, but he did a BMW motorcycle themed build. It's from Jugapat Modifier, and I have to say this might be my favorite one out of the ones that he's done. It basically looks like almost like a BMW motorcycle with a computer inside. And I just think that this is his thing. This is what, you know, this,
yeah,
is kind
a great
of what
niche
he does
for him.
Yeah, it looks awesome. You know, I think that, yeah, like, this is just his thing, and it really catches my eye, this one. Maybe it's just the blue. I've always been a fan of the BMW blue.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome components inside as well.
Yeah.
He has that MSI Meg creation board in there. He has the big-ass heat killer block on there. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like how he has the water cooling, because it looks a little bit like it's part of the bike almost.
Yeah, it's not bad. He doesn't go all the way with this build as in like integrating parts into like like making them look like parts of the motorcycle, like we've seen with some builds. And I think even with the Ducati build, I think he had parts integrated into like this is part of the exhaust or whatever, you know. He doesn't go all the way, but he does a really good job of tucking it in and kind of just like, it's kind of just the engine, right?
Yeah.
And then the like you said, the tubing does a fair enough job of looking like it's part of the bike. He's got like a reddish pink coolant in it that could be fuel. So that looks pretty cool. So it looks like it maybe like a fuel line or something. Yeah, it's just a solid build. As far as theme builds go, he nails it on the creation, you know, on the exterior of the bike. It's spot on, I would say.
Yeah, it's one of the best ones I've seen from him as far as like looking exactly like a BMW motorcycle, and he does it quite well.
Yeah.
So definitely check this one out if you're kind of a fan of those builds. He does a great job with these, and like I said, we have at least featured one of his Ducati ones. I don't know if we did two, but there's at least one more back in there. Yeah. And then finally, our video for this week, like I said, we are posting one video a week now on our YouTube channel. And this week I took a look at the Cooler Master Masterbox Q500L. So if you remember, I reviewed that a few weeks ago. This is basically a micro ATX case that Cooler Master has turned into an ATX case, and it actually works pretty well. We talked about it. It's a $60 case. You really can't complain that much about $60, but I kind of go over it in the video, pros and cons and everything like that. So definitely check out that video. We will have it linked in the show notes. And let's jump into Computex. This is one of the more exciting Computexes, I think, in the past few years, just with the amount of stuff and the things you didn't even think about that, you know, are coming out or were announced or anything like that. So first, the big announcement, which we expected, which I think all of us expected, was that AMD announced their third generation Ryzen processors, which of course are based on the Zen 2 microarchitecture. And very impressive.
Yeah.
Starting out with the flagship, which is the Ryzen 9 3900X. This is a 12-core, 24-thread part. 12-core, 24-thread on a mainstream part, which is crazy. Yeah. It has a base clock.
Just the next level, right?
Yeah. Base clock of 3.6 gigahertz, and it boosts all the way up to 4.6 gigahertz, 72 megabytes of total cache, and a 105 watt TDP.
So low.
The performance, the performance, according to AMD, it will beat the i9-9900K, but it also will beat the i9-9920X, which is our high-end desktop processor. Part. Yeah. It's going to be, was it $499? Yeah, yep, $499.
Yeah. At first, I was wondering why they were comparing it to the 9920X, but that, I believe, is that Intel's cheapest 12-core part?
I believe so, yes.
So that explains why they're comparing that, if anybody's wondering. Because I think the natural comparison would, like you said, would be between the 9900K. And they'd actually probably get an even larger performance gap that way, but this compares 12 cores to 12 cores, so...
Yeah. So yeah,
it's an impressive piece.
That's the flagship part. That's the one everybody's gonna want. And then we.
I think 20% of people are gonna want that one because it's so overkill for most people. That's everyone that wants to do work with it, right?
Gaming,
that is so overkill. That is a wonderful part for encoding of any type, and obviously it's gonna crush games as well. But yeah, so I think the real serious user, that is what everyone's going to buy.
Yeah, I love the part. I love that AMD is just, again, AMD could have just said our flagship part is an 8-core, 16-thread part. Like, they could have done that, but they
could have, but I think it would have given Intel too much of an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. So next down the line, we have the Ryzen 7 3800X. This is the 8-core, 16-thread part. Base clock of 3.9 gigahertz and it boosts up to 4.5 gigahertz, 36 megabytes of total cache, and has the same 105 watt TDP. This will be $399, so $100 difference between the two. And then moving down, we have the Ryzen 7 3700X, which again is an 8-core, 16-thread part, but it has a base clock of 3.6 gigahertz and boosts up to 4.4, 36 megabytes of cache. But this is the one that is lower TDP. This is 65 watts, and that will be 329. And then we move to the Ryzen 5 3000 series. So we have a Ryzen 5 3600X has a base clock of 3.8 gigahertz and will boost all the way up to 4.4 gigahertz, 95 watt TDP on that one. And then you have a Ryzen 5 3600 base clock of 3.6 gigahertz and will boost up to 4.2 gigahertz. So this lineup will be available on 7/7/2019. Nice. All very aggressive price points as well. Wow. I mean, we all kind of like, we expected this, but like you hear it like months ago and you're like, yeah, but like now that it's actually here and you're like, holy shit, like AMD is just crushing it.
Not even a stutter in the step here. This is just moving forward. It's a machine right now, just cranking out parts.
Yeah, and these parts have been ready from all accounts too. Yeah, like it hasn't been like we're waiting. Like
I think we're just in the middle of an entire game plan here that they're just rolling through. This is all well pre-planned, and all these steps were pre-Ryzen, right? Like they knew where they were going with this when they launched their first part. Yeah. So that's
go ahead.
Well, I think that's what that plan is. What's just making this feel seamless, and these jumps are good, clean advances in performance, and that's why Intel isn't able to respond, because Intel is, they don't have a plan. They were doling out like age old tech for years. So yeah, there's no innovation plan from them. So that's why they just don't seem to be able to respond.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like they had this game plan, and it's a game plan of actually doing things for consumers, not milking a product line for forever.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't mention this is of course 7-nanometer technology too. That's probably why you see in those lower TDPs on the high core parts, which is very impressive. So I'm really excited. Again, these will go on sales. Their big date is 7/7/2019, of course, to coincide with 7-nanometer. Really, really excited about these. But we are hearing whispers that high end part isn't what's, you know, that's not all that's there. That I've just heard some stuff that they might be planning a 3950X that's 16 core. But I don't know.
That's just what I've heard. Little partial steps.
Yeah, yeah. So who knows? I think they're waiting for Intel, and then they'll put that other part out.
See what they respond with. Yeah.
But another big thing about this is from the beginning, AMD had said that the AM4 socket will be backwards compatible with all new parts up to 2022. I believe it was. But that is not the case. It's interesting. So first generation Ryzen motherboards will not support, Ryzen CPUs will not work on X570 motherboards, which is one, nobody's buying a brand new third gen,
motherboard
part or third gen, motherboard.
You might,
for, why
PCIe 4.0
4.0 I don't know
if you need that throughput.
Yeah, so maybe you're on a you had built initially a Ryzen system, when first gen Ryzen came out, and now you've waited, and now you want a new motherboard, not a new processor. I guess I
do think that's weird, right? That's unlikely, but I could see the scenario where in this case those X570 motherboards actually have something to offer that previous generations wouldn't have had to offer. Like there would have been no reason if you had a first gen board and a first gen part to want to get a second gen board. Like, what would you what would you do that for other than like different blinky lights, right? So, but in this case, like, there, that's something, like, because you can get a lot more life out of your processor. Like, a Ryzen first-gen processor, like, for all intents and purposes, if you're not trying to run, like, bleeding-edge games or do anything, like, super crazy with it, and you're good with it, you're probably good for, like, 5 years.
Yeah, I guess you could say, like again, PCI Express 4.0, that's something to look forward to. That's something that you might want for faster speeds and things like that. But yeah, so it's not compatible. I'm not sure why. It hasn't really been explained why. Specifically, it's the same physical socket.
Mm-hmm.
And so who knows why?
Do you think it is the lanes?
It might have something to do with PCI Express 4.0. I don't know.
I would think that would be more chipset related.
Yeah, and again, second gen is supported. So what's in second gen that's not in first gen? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, was that a die shrink?
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't new architecture.
Okay.
So you know what I mean? It wasn't. What's it called? Like, we're on Zen 2. It was still Zen 1. Still Zen 1. So, yeah. So I don't know. But yeah. So
we'll probably find out though.
Yeah, we'll eventually find out.
Someone will probably hack it to make it work, but.
Yeah. So on the other spectrum, Intel, they did tease it and then they officially announced it is the Core i9-9900KS.
Yep.
This is basically a Core i9-9900K that has an all-core boost up to 5 gigahertz. So not just one or two cores will boost to 5 gigahertz. All of them will. I don't know how they're going to cool this thing. Based on
no die changes, no.
Yeah,
nothing. I mean, it's got to be it has to be revised slightly. Not necessarily, but there's got to be. You got to think that they've revised and fine tuned it, and that
from what I've read, the algorithm or whatever that actually boosted it has been significantly improved, and they're actually releasing a new overclocking tool as well. They announced that at their Computex keynote as well. That's all supposed to help with this whole thing.
Well, can I just get that algorithm for the 9900K? Because I mean,
yeah,
that's just software.
Yeah. So I don't know. Again, this is like, kind of like, oh, we knew AMD was going to announce this. We need to have something. Because, again, we won't see 10-nanometer desktop parts till 2021, if I'm right. Is that right?
Yeah, 2021? I'm pretty sure. 2022.
Yeah, so this is like what they had to do to kind of take some momentum away from AMD, which I don't believe they did with this announcement. It's a cool part. I think that's cool. I don't know how they're going to keep the thing cool. Because, I mean, we overclocked to 5.1 gigahertz and it was hot on an AIO.
Yeah.
So imagine people, you know, doing an air cooler or not having a good ventilated case or a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, there's more cooling that you can do, right? But
obviously, yeah.
With the performance that you get off of like decent AIO is pretty poor. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Yeah. I even have like a really good AIO on mine and it's completely stock. It's fairly hot. It's surprisingly hot. So
yeah, it gets quite hot. So we'll see what that does. I mean, you know what I mean? And if you know what the performance difference would be compared to a 9900K at stock, you know, both of them running at stock, and like what difference you're gonna make. I didn't think they announced pricing on it. I'm not sure. But those were the big CPU announcements from Computex, and we're gonna move over to graphics cards. And the big one, again from AMD, is that they previewed the first Navi 7-nanometer gaming card. They showed it off in a demo against a RTX 2070, which it's supposed to, that's the market that they're going for. It beat it by 10% in this specific demo. Which they only ran this demo.
This demo that they're showing on stage that they have to beat it in.
Yeah. Now the thing that I liked about this is not a GCN architecture card. This is the first non-GCN architecture card. Mm-hmm. It's called their new architecture. Macro architecture is called RDNA. And it's supposed to give a 1.5 performance per watt advantage over GCN. I don't know.
It's better than I thought. I honestly thought we were gonna have another RX launch with parts that underperformed NVIDIA. So thumbs up for that.
Yeah, you thought
more than 10% though?
I'm interesting to see what it does across a spectrum of games. Yeah. It's very interesting that they showed one game in the performance difference in one specific game.
Yeah.
They
might have optimized for.
Yeah, or whatever the case may be. We're up to it's called the RX 5000 family, and this is going to be the 5700. Mm-hmm. I do like that, you know, RTX 2070, 5700, and they make it easy to kind of
easy to compare. Yeah. With. Yeah. I actually like that.
We'll have to see. They said that they're going to unveil more details at their next Horizon event at E3 in a couple weeks. They said that it will be available in July. So we could see it on the same launch date as the 7/7/2019 as the Ryzen 3000. We'll see. There's really not much to say about it because we don't know anything else. That's all we know.
And there's never going to be too much to say about it because there's no flagship part yet. So,
yeah.
Meh.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, okay, we have to wait. Like, let's keep on waiting.
Well, at best, it's going to like match an RTX, you know, 2080 at best, like absolute best, and I don't think it's going to. So like, it's never going to be like, wow, look at this. It'll have to be, the price is significantly cheaper than an RTX 2070, and have a slight bit of performance gain. Because otherwise, I just don't see the reason to risk buying an AMD card. They just have so many issues.
I agree. So. We'll see in 2 weeks. We'll obviously let you guys know, the more details that they give us at the E3 event. That's just, you know, that's what you have to look forward to. One really interesting thing is that ASRock had kind of concept cards based on the RX 5000 series. So ASRock only sells AMD graphics cards. They don't work with NVIDIA, but the really interesting thing about these cards is they look really good. The Phantom Gaming cards from ASRock haven't looked all that great. They've only had the RX 580, you know, RX 500 series generation to really do it with, because the Radeon 7, there was no custom cards. These are all custom cards. And the one really interesting thing is that ASRock is going to put out a Tai Chi card. If you're familiar with their motherboards, a Tai Chi is basically the best value for the, like, putting the best things on the board at a good value. It's basically like, I've always been a fan of the Tai Chi boards because they have everything. They don't have extra crap you don't need, and they're very affordable.
They usually look good, too.
And they look really good. And they showed off a Tai Chi graphics card that looked really good. And they also showed off two Phantom Gaming cards that also look really good for AMD cards, in my opinion. Especially with the one that's loaded out with RGBs on the back plate. They look good.
Yeah, I agree.
I like Tai Chi. I like the Tai Chi brand on their motherboards. I've always been a fan.
The Tai Chi card is by far the best.
It looks really good, too. There's RGB lighting on the front and the back. It's just a different look. I think that if the 5000 series from AMD does good, these cards are gonna definitely be like the front. You know, I really like the design. It gets me excited about graphics cards again, because I like ASRock as a brand. I like their motherboards a lot, and if they bring that type of stuff to the graphics card side of things, I'll be really excited. So we'll have to see. But we have pictures. We have a gallery of all of these prototype cards that they showed. And one thing about the cards is that there's going to be two different, two SKUs at least. They kind of like let that information out. So there's going to be a SKU with 180 watt TDP, which will have a total board power of 225 watts, and then 150 watt TDP with an 180 watt total board power. So I'm thinking that's like the RX 5700 is the 180 watt version. Mm-hmm. And there'll be like one that competes with the 2060, which will be the 150 watt version.
Yeah, interesting that there is only two SKUs.
Yeah,
kind of would have thought at least three cards would have launched, but
I kind of like the idea of AMD keeping it simple.
Yeah, let's see them do one card good first.
Yeah, I think that you put out a whole line of eight cards. They're not really exciting, maybe put out two cards that are semi-exciting at decent price points, allow third-party designs, which we're seeing here, get people more excited, and then the next round kind of go a little bit more than that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll see. This is something to get more excited about than the actual AMD announcement, in my opinion, which is kind of funny, yeah. So... and moving on to the NVIDIA side of things, we saw two graphics cards at Computex, and honestly, for them being like the super high-end cards, not a fan at all. The first one is MSI's RTX 2080 Ti Lightning. This is their 10th anniversary edition to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Lightning card. It looks pretty much the same as the one we saw at CES.
Yeah, it's silver instead of gold.
Yeah, it's silver instead of gold.
That was a like cool card, but I think the gold kind of made it cool.
The thing is like, this is your 10th anniversary. You have a chance to do something real crazy, and like, it's the same card. It's like, where's the innovation?
Maybe they forgot they had an anniversary coming.
Yeah. And then on the other side, one of my favorite graphics card companies with his favorite graphics card lines, too, is the Galax GeForce RTX 2080 Ti Hall of Fame Edition, 10th Anniversary Edition. Looks like crap.
Oh, it's terrible.
What is with this circular design that we've seen on a couple of these? The colorful card had it, too, with like the... It's white, which I like, but the...
Oh, but it's horrible. It's horrid, though.
The shroud is ugly.
Yeah, that's what's ugly.
The circular thing around the center fan is stupid. That lights up with RGB lighting, which makes it look even dumber. I like that this is a hybrid card, so you can connect it to your loop. And it's a big card. It's real big, but like, what? Again, Hall of Fame Edition has been my favorite. All of their products are awesome.
Yeah.
What happened here?
I kind of feel like this is sort of a Chinese design aesthetic. Like, it appeals to that market.
Is it?
Yeah. If you look at some of their cars and stuff like that, like, it sort of has the same feel.
I could see that. And again, Galax is not sold in the United States.
No. Is it strictly China, or is it just Asia? Or is it Asia?
Galaxy, I think, is still Chinese only, and then there's Galax, which is sold in European market.
Oh,
and I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't think we have.
No, we don't.
You can get this stuff, but you have to get it shipped over.
Yeah.
But yeah, really disappointing those two cards. I was really expecting, especially that Lightning card. I was expecting a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would expect equally. Equally, I would expect them both to be like astounding or really cool or something special, because they're both known for that. But I do know what you mean, that the MSI just doing the same thing, like, that is so lame.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. We'll move on to motherboards, and there's a lot of cool motherboards, especially X 570 motherboards, of course, with the announcement of third generation Ryzen. We have all new boards from all the major players. So we have an article that shows off a lot of the boards, and then we have links to all the product pages, because all the product pages are live. So you can go through and check a lot of those out. I like the way a lot of the Aorus boards look. Of course, Asus boards look good. Mm-hmm. The ASRock boards look good as well. And even them, like, everybody's boards.
Yeah, the Godlike looks great.
I think we're getting to parity with the Intel boards as far as design.
We might have even shifted. Honestly, yeah. honestly, this might have shifted because these designs are more interesting than what we've seen on a whole from these companies than what we've seen for Intel. I actually think these are great.
Yeah, these look amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty excited to
Asus is probably get some of these the least out there. The others really went for it though.
Yeah, Asus is a pretty lot of safe, companies, but
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of companies are really, really going out there with their designs. And we want to talk about some of the more interesting boards. The first one actually comes from ASRock. Their X570 board.
Yeah, the price tag in this title is astounding.
Yeah, so this is their flagship board. It's called the X570 Aqua.
It's a little boring.
And it has an integrated monoblock that will cover the CPU, the VRM, and the chipset.
Yeah, all the way.
I couldn't find information on like if they made this in house, if they worked with a company. I don't see any like branding. I don't see an EK logo, I don't see a Bits Power logo, I don't see any logos on it.
I hope they didn't.
But then there's a cover that covers most of the board, and I think the cover is kind of boring.
I agree. They could have done something with the design. It's just plain silver. Yeah. Like maybe when it gets lit up, but even I assume that the first photo is all lit up. That's as much as it goes, that's boring too. Cause you have the opportunity with a cover like that, that you can do lighting all around the PCI slots, all the expansion slots. You could have done it. They actually probably should have extended the cover around the RAM as well and done the same thing. So if this is lit as well, as much as it's ever going to be, opportunity missed.
Yeah, I think that they could have done more. I like it because this is the ASRock's first board that we've seen water cooling.
Mm-hmm.
First time they're doing like a limited edition board.
Yeah, it's
like this. There's only going to be
$999. On the bottom corner of the board is 002 out of 999. So
yeah, so there's 999 of these, which is really cool. I like that. I like that it's very limited edition. This board has everything. It also has built-in Thunderbolt 3.
Yeah.
So you're getting full Thunderbolt 3 two channels. So you're gonna get that, which is really impressive. 2, 4, 6, 8 SATA 6 gig ports. You also, I don't know how many M.2s are on here. I forget.
Two.
I'm trying to read my post. Yeah, you get 2 M.2s on here.
Which is
you get low. 10. You get 10 gig Ethernet as well as 1 gig on there. You get 802.11ax on this. Bluetooth 5.0. Realtek ALC 1220, so really high end components on there.
Yeah,
it is really nice. They didn't release the price, but everybody's saying it's gonna be $1,000, which puts it up there. Like it's pretty expensive. I think I forget how much the Aorus board was.
Not $1,000.
It was close though. It was like $699.
Yeah, but it's Aorus. It's not ASRock.
Yeah, but the Thunderbolt obviously puts it up there. Not many boards have full dual link Thunderbolt on there.
Sure.
which is actually kind of surprising.
Yeah, because it's such a useful tech. But in this segment, it's not something that people are using, though, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's not as useful as it. Like, I have Thunderbolt on my Ultrabook. Like, it's super useful.
Yeah.
You know, on that specific thing. But on a desktop, not very
you're
useful. Not.
Unless you're, really wanting to daisy chain monitors.
Yeah, or something like that.
Or you have some external storage device.
Yeah. So I like it. I think the next gen will be better.
I hope so. I mean, dude, that's not a $1,000 board.
Close, no way. But yeah, no way. I could see.
You can't justify it with the block. You can't justify it with the block because you can do that. Generally speaking, you can do like full blocks. It won't be as integrated, but you can get that. You can accomplish that for far less money.
Yeah, I think I could see this. $699 would be my price. Yeah. You have to factor in 10 gig Ethernet, 802.11ax, which this is all newer tech, Thunderbolt 3. So I
just hope they haven't sunk too much money into it, because I don't see it being like a profitable thing. It's just a cool thing for them. That's not their gig. Their gig is high value, low cost.
Yeah, I agree. I think they just want to kind of not compete, but like compete for recognition.
Yeah, they just want to have horse to put in the race.
Yeah. So I like it. I was excited when I saw it. Very, very cool board. I would love to have one. I would never want to pay $1,000 for it. But yeah. And the next big board, which isn't an X570 board, this is actually
but it does have a really sweet heat sink or water cooling block.
It does. So this is an Intel C21 chipset board from EVGA. We saw one in person, and we saw the other one shortly thereafter. Asus had their Dominus board, which is made for this, and this is made for the Intel Xeon W3175X, the one that was shown at Computex last year with that fake
cooling. Thing's so fast. Would they have it at 5 gigahertz all across the board on 24 cores?
28 cores.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive for something with phase change.
They were using a commercial size cooler for this thing. But anyways, this is a C621 motherboard from EVGA. It's called their SR3 Dark. And this is, they've really done this interesting, and they've done it, I think, the correct way if you want a real enthusiast to use this. Because the first thing is that it's an eATX form factor, which means it's going to fit in any full tower. Well, the one from Asus and the other one from Gigabyte, they're in the, I think it's the EBB form factor. Yeah, or EEB, sorry, yeah, form factor, which means you need a specific case. Inwin came out with one, and a couple other companies have them, but they're ultra expensive. Yeah, they're ultra expensive, where like you can buy a $150 case and put this board in there. Yeah. They've also limited the memory to one channel per channel. What they did there. This also has an integrated water block on it that cools the VRM as well as the chipset. Looks great.
Yeah. I'll come up at the end. You got your flow going.
We've been doing that a lot this
episode. Yeah, it's a bad one for that. But.
It has 1, 2, 3, 4 8-pin EPS connectors on it. It has 2 M.2s on it. I think they've done this one correctly. I really think they've done it right. I mean, you have your 6 PCI Express 3.0 X16 slots, 8 USB 3.0, 2 USB 3.1 Gen 2. This is everything that you'd want on it, and it looks so good. And I think EVGA is the one to do this. Oh, they've also changed the orientation of the CPU socket. I didn't talk about that. So it takes up less space, which, again, very smart. So I really like the design of this. I don't know if they put in pricing on this one. $2,000.
Oh, gosh. I don't think the Dominus was that much. Wasn't Dominus like 15?
I think that Dominus was right around the same price.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just remembering wrong. That's so much money for a motherboard. This is a different category of buyer.
I think the chip is 5,000. So.
Yeah. So to me, obvious, they took the design cues from the Z390 Dark, right?
But it does
a lot of the same things, though. Like, they've limited the RAM slots, and that reduces space, and reoriented it so that everything is easier to access. With the Z390, that's, it's really intended for, like, doing extreme overclocking with LN2 and stuff like that. I don't think you're really going to do that with this part. Maybe? Do you think? Even
a lot of people have been.
Have they?
Yeah, a lot of people have
been. Wow, I would say this is what that's targeted at then. put some active cooling on your chipset and your VRMs. You know, all you got to do is hook that up to a loop and you're good to go there, and then dump some liquid nitrogen on the processor. That's...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know the Dominus did not come with a block.
Right.
On the VRM.
No, it didn't, but Fantex had one for it. That's where we saw it.
Yeah, Fantex had one for it. And the Gigabyte one, I don't believe, came with a block either. So this is the first one that we've seen come with the integrated block, which is more or less what you need. I mean, in all intents and purposes.
Yeah, it seems like it's actually basically a must. Because how much power? It's got 4 8 pins in addition to the 24 pin. That is so much power. Yeah. That is ridiculous.
I think this is one of my favorite products from Computex.
Yeah. Well, just like the Dominus was. I think Dominus was product of the show for me at CES. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's a product we'll never have, but we just want. God, yeah. And I think EVGA made this look like just like the gold trimming on it.
Can't get enough of those boards. And I don't know how many layers this is, but it's so thick. It looks so nice. Yeah, love the PCB on these.
Yeah, just a sick looking board. So if you're going to check out any article from Computex from us, that's the one you should check out. But the next one's actually really interesting. So Asus has this new concept called the Prime Utopia, and they're trying to redesign the ATX form factor, right? We've had the ATX form factor since 1995, believe it or not. And especially when it comes to like M.2s and things like that and these new technologies, if everything's on the same side of the board, it just takes up too much space. Right. So what they've done is they've designed this board called the Prime Utopia, which it's a concept, so it's not something that's like immediately coming to market. But what they've done is they've designed it so the big change is that the PCI Express slots are on the rear of the board. So you would install your graphics cards on that side, mm-hmm. as well as the CPU VRM has been moved to the back of the board as well. And those are all cooled. The CPU VRM is actually liquid cooled in this scenario. Yeah.
In this concept, was this an actual running concept or is it just...
Oh, yeah. Everything was running.
Oh, that's cool.
In this concept. And so you have that. And then on the opposite side where, say, your PCI Express slots would be, there's actually 4 M.2s. So, you know, on these motherboards, if they were ever to come out, you would be able to do very fast RAID without any hiccups at all.
Yeah, without any additional.
Without anything, no expansion card or anything like that. And then covering up those M.2s is a really cool thing. It's a 7-inch OLED screen, mm-hmm. that allows you, it's a touch screen, and you can see stats on your system. You can go into the BIOS. You can do things like that.
It's basically a mini BIOS shot.
Yeah, and you can tune your system. You can do all that, but it's detachable, meaning you can set this on your desk. Cool. It's Wi-Fi enabled, and you can, you know, monitor all of your stats and everything like that.
That is pretty cool.
The other cool thing is they're rethinking motherboard design. And one of the things sometimes I've run into in the past is like, I need more USB ports, or I don't need two NICs, I just need one, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever it may be, or new technology comes out, I want that on my board. I remember when USB 3 came out, because it was such a leap from, you know, 33.33 megabytes a second to what was first gen 3.0, did I forget, but it was much faster.
Oh, it was night and day.
Yeah. And I couldn't wait to upgrade to a USB 3.0 board. So they're talking, you know, this board is designed with modular or flexible IO. So you have these little, they look like cartridges almost, yeah. that would go in your rear IO that you could pick what you wanted. So again, if you needed more USB, you just load them in there. If you needed more Ethernet, you load that in there. If whatever you needed, you load it in there. And these are connected via mini PCI Express, and it's all contained. So, you know, if you have 6 USB ports on your motherboard now, you need the USB controller on the board. That's all contained in this little modular cartridge.
Huh.
So you could add things as long as, you know, you could add whatever it may be right on there. And you could switch it out or do whatever you want. I thought that was really cool. just a different way to think about motherboards. And the other thing that they invented, which I think we'll see more than this, actually this whole motherboard, is their new it's called Hydra Cortex fan header that supports up to 4 fans. And this is one single header that you connect 4 fans to. I'm not sure how that would work, obviously. They didn't really have that shown. But this one single connection supports 4 fans. Not only does it support, you know, controlling the fans, speeds, and things like that, but it also controls addressable RGB lighting.
One port for both.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work.
Or it just supports, both power and LED lighting. RGB lighting.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it works. They didn't really have that shown up, but that's one of the more exciting things, because I think we'll see that tech in boards before any of this other stuff.
It's interesting.
Because we'll see Aura Sync 2.0, and that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so very interesting. I really like this. I think that, again, we've had the same design since 1995. There's obviously issues with fitting stuff on the board. There's also issues with cooling and things like that. I think it's going to take a long time for the whole industry to change, but it's cool to see that Asus is thinking forward. And I like almost everything about this. I like, you know, the modular ports, the rearranging of certain things. Again, that detachable screen, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool. I like it.
As a concept, I think it's all cool. Fundamentally, the board redesign, there's potential for that, but that's something that has to be so carefully thought out if you're going to make a new standard. Because it'd be really hard for us to recommend somebody something during its intermediate phases. And that also requires case redesign.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of other things, maybe we're primed for that because we've been dealing with the same thing forever. But there's also, on the other hand, maybe it's not broken. Maybe you just want to change it because you're bored, you know?
Yeah, that too. I think that in the future, the fan connector and the modular ports is something we might see in an ATX board. Because you can do that in the ATX form factor. So, cool thing. Like, check it out. I think it's an interesting design, and I didn't link it. I should have linked it in the article. Asus, on their blog, they have a whole blog post with everything, talking about it, the whole design and everything like that. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Really cool
future
stuff.
Future tech.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. It's something different. Moving on to memory. There's a couple more stories we'll talk about next week, but the memory that kind of caught my eye, it's actually from Thermaltake. They had their new Tough RAM RGB. It's just a decent design, I think. We saw their water-cooled memory. And if you weren't water-cooling, it wasn't really exciting to you. So they have their Tough RAM RGB, which will be available in 3000, 3200, and 3600 megahertz versions. Works with all the RGB software as well as Thermaltake's RGB software. I just think it looks good, and I think if you're in the Thermaltake ecosystem, it kind of makes sense to get these. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
I don't really have many.
You know, yeah.
We'll see when we test it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as performance goes, but I just think they look like they're just a solid-looking kit.
We're seeing a lot of diversification from these companies, these accessory companies, and part of it worries me that we're not going to get well-built products, well-thought-out products. Maybe that's an unnecessary fear or unrealistic fear, but I don't know. So especially something like memory, I feel like that's a crucial part of your system. It can cost you money. It can ruin your day if it's not good. So company just popping up with it, regardless of like how long Thermaltake's been around, they're not a memory company.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we have seen it. You know, and I can't think. I'm trying to think of a company that started to come out with memory that's like it's a big name now. I can't think of one. Can you think of one?
No, like because Corsair's always done memory.
Yeah.
In fact, I think they were originally memory, right?
Yeah. Corsair was originally a memory company, for everybody who's wondering. Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a company come out with, like, Corsair did it with cases, right?
Yeah.
And AIOs, like, they were a memory company, now they're known for those other things very well. But we haven't seen a company come out with memory and being very well known for memory. We haven't seen it.
It's one of those things that, like, I think is, it seems like it's one of those things that's, it's really hard to perfect the process and to do really well, because it is almost like making processors, right? Like, it's crucial and it's complicated and it's complex to get it to work right.
Yeah, and I think
it's not a processor, but, you know.
Yeah, I think that too, these other companies have such good reputation, like, why would you go against the known brand, you know?
Yeah.
So I like the design of them, and I think it makes sense for Thermaltake to put out that product. But would I choose that over a Corsair or a G-Skill or something? No, I don't think I would, you know?
I would feel much better about the... I'd feel much better if they were partnered with another company.
I don't think you're going to see that anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Nah, probably. Just definitely because not
it is so easy to come out with these memory. We saw it from Gigabyte, and their Aorus brand as well has memory. Yeah. And we'll see a couple more from Computex that we'll talk about next week that have... very interesting companies have come out with memory that you wouldn't think. So we'll talk about that next week. The big thing, there was a lot of announcements, and we're going to talk about one or two actually, is new M.2 NVMe drives. Now with PCI Express 4.0, you're getting more bandwidth.
Yeah. Can you drive that up again.
Yeah. So now, I mean, right now, with PCI Express 3.0, the fastest M.2 NVMe drives are around 3,500 megabytes a second or 3.5 gigabytes a second.
That's on a very mature product, too.
Yeah, that's stuff that just came out this year.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's been developed over the years, right? So it's the culmination for that generation of PCI.
And then the controllers and all that. Now... this year with PCI Express Gen 4, you're going to see drives that are capable of 5 gigabytes a second or, you know, 5,000 megabytes per second. Yeah. Corsair announced their MP600, which can do those speeds. I mean, you're going to see it's a Phison controlled, so it's the Phison PS 5016 E16. You'll see a lot of drives based on that controller come out this year. And so we're just taking it to the next level.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is actually something that I've kind of been looking forward to.
This is serious speed. Yeah.
This is noticeable differences in your use, your daily use.
Yeah.
This is hard disk drive to solid state drive.
Yes.
Less noticeable, but still.
Yeah, very, very fast. If you're going from a normal SSD, which would max out around 550 megabytes a second, so this is super fast.
This is a different world,
so that's the big thing. And I didn't even expect that. I didn't even think about it. I should have, because I feel I'm semi-smart. We're getting, like, PCI Express Gen 4 is faster, so we'll have faster M.2s. Yeah. It didn't even come in my mind until I saw the first thing, the first headline about some of these.
That's been what we've been waiting for, though, is that bandwidth has been holding us back on storage speed. So we're into the next category.
So Gigabyte wanted to take things a little bit further, and they have a new PCI Express 4.0 M.2 adapter, which they're gonna sell. I believe one of these will come with one of their high end boards. But also they're gonna sell it under the Aorus brand as an 8 terabyte SSD, which means you'll have four 2 terabyte PCI Express 4.0 M.2 drives in there. This thing is capable of not 5, but 15 gigabytes per second. They actually showed the test.
Oh my gosh.
The Crystal Dismark test, and it is fast. This is super fast.
What is the spec on PCIe 4? Is it what is that saturation at 15 or is it? Is it?
I don't
know.
Greater
than that? I haven't looked at it.
Well, PCI Express 4 is I think it's 64 gigabytes, gigabyte a second.
Okay, so then no, it's not. It's not even close. Yeah, that's pretty incredible though. Like, actually, that's absolutely incredible. Of course, it's rated, but you know we were rating solid state drives too, so. It counts.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah, so it's four drives in RAID on a card that looks almost like a graphics card, an AMD graphics card.
This is one of those take my money fan moments.
Yeah, you have a fan there.
It's gonna be good. Needed.
It has a full metal backplate as well, because it kind of looks like a graphics card. Yeah, I definitely would love one of these. Again, well, probably one of my favorite products of the show, just because I love speed. I love you know, encoding on this and making this a scratch drive in Premiere, which is, like, I actually like products that I'm actually going to use and would help my overall
increase your workflow,
like what help my workflow, and this definitely would. Also, like, loading games up on this would be like one click.
You're always the first guy in.
You're first guy in, things like that. So really, really cool. No word on pricing. The Aorus one is going to be expensive. It's 8 terabyte one, and it's the new stuff. But remember, you're only going to be able to use this, at least right now, on X570 motherboards. So you need to have all that to even
advantage AMD.
Yeah, another big advantage for AMD. And then this generation M.2 was shown, but it's very interesting. And I like this idea for looks and everything like that. You're obviously the water cooling guy, but Team Group showed their Cardia Liquid M.2. So this is an M.2 drive with a, I guess you would call it a water block on top.
I mean, it's water block in that it's a heat sink that contains water.
Yeah, it's a heat sink that contains coolant, but it's not connected to anything.
No.
So you don't connect this into your loop or anything like that.
It's reminiscent of that, was it A-Data or was it?
Yeah,
A-Data. A-Data memory, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the D80, I believe it was called from A-Data, or the D40, I forget, D40 or D80. But
big difference is you're not putting performance fluid in this.
You can't.
I guess you could.
So you can empty it out and change the coolant whenever you want.
The idea being that you can change the color of it. Their idea. But I guess, the option would be to get your hands on some of that 3M product and put it in there.
Yeah, or like any coolant that you would, you know.
Yeah, I say specifically the 3M stuff because it's thermally more capable. That's the point. That's why it's in that memory. So,
yeah. But I think for looks, because there are M.2 blocks, but you can't really tell what they are. Like, yeah. I've seen one in a loop, and the M.2 is just too small. The 1/4, what are they, G1/4 threadings or whatever? That's like the standard.
It's like the whole
thing. They take up the whole, you know, you have two of them in there. It just takes up too much. This is, their Team Group says it keeps it 10 degrees cooler than normal. And if I'm doing a loop build and I can put the same coolant that I'm using in my loop in three of these on my board, I think it's going to make it look a lot better.
Yeah. Are they LED?
I don't believe so.
It's a bummer.
At least from the photos. Yeah. Again, we're getting all of this stuff from Computex, like, secondhand. Yeah. So I don't believe so. That would be a nice little addition right there.
Yeah. Doesn't look like it at all. So
it doesn't look like it. But I think, like, again, just for looks, I like it. And if the premium is not $60 like we saw with the, it wasn't made clear if it comes with coolant initially. That wasn't made clear anywhere. I couldn't find that information. But these will be available in 256 gigabytes all the way up to 1 terabyte drives. This is this generation M.2, so 3,400 megabytes a second, read 3,000 megabytes a second, right? So still very fast drive. And if you look at their normal Cardia drives, this is a far step ahead in looks-wise. yeah. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So we will move on to, you know, each year at Computex, we try to... Or, not we, InWin tries to do a Signature Series case. They've done Signature Series for a while, and it's always been amazing up until the past few years. I remember, like, the D frame, the S frame, the Tau, and the Tau 2.0, which was one of my favorite cases of all time. It's completely, like... The case looks like it's glass, but then when you light it up from the inside, you could see through it. It's one of the coolest things. But in the past, I would say 2 or 3 years, InWin has kind of disappointed when it came to their Signature Series.
Yeah.
The robot thing was kind of cool because it uses some kind of tech, but I think that's when they kind of got away. So they had the robot thing, and then they had the Z Tower last year, which was more or less a piece of art.
Yep, the computer stuck inside it.
And then this year they have the Young, I believe that is what it's called. It's 3D printed structure around a stand that has your hardware inside. Each design, I guess you design it online now, from the details that I've heard today. Mm-hmm. You design this online yourself, so no one of these is the same. It's 3D printed, and then there are... all these different steps to polish it and color it, or, you know, paint it and anodize it and all this stuff. And it's $4,000.
There's just no way. It's just
not cool.
It doesn't even, it doesn't even look cool.
It's a piece of art, right?
With it.
I want my computer to look like a computer.
Well, I think that a well built computer is a piece of art. Personally,
correct.
This is a piece of art that somebody threw. Honestly, what, like, in the way that it is, it some ugly computer hardware into it. Like, the shapes do not mesh. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the colors don't match either. Like, the motherboard tray is black, where the versions that they were showing, the one that only looks good is like the chrome kind of, or not chrome, but
yeah,
like,
it's gunmetal, silver, gray. Yeah, gunmetal, yeah,
yeah. But like,
because that's just because it hides it the most.
Yeah, it doesn't match. Like, I would never want this sitting next to me.
No.
I just wouldn't.
The shape's like, you could put this in a garden maybe with like some other weird things around it. I don't think I'd put any of these shapes in my house, to be honest.
Yeah, like the S frame was like awesome. It won the whole thing behind the S frame was that a single piece of aluminum was bent, I think, 9 ways to make the case.
Yeah.
It still looked like a computer case. It was an open air computer case. It looked like a computer case. Like, this is such a departure from the Signature Series. And like, I like the whole story behind this. Like, they say its concept is from observing when a butterfly there like gets born and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, like, but that's cool for a piece of art. That's not cool for a chassis, especially because the Signature Series was known so well. Everybody wanted a D frame. Everybody wanted an S frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Tau 2.0. Like, I wanted a Tau 2.0 so bad. Yeah. That was, like, one of my favorite cases of all time. And I've reviewed hundreds of cases. I mean, that was, like, my favorite case of all time. Yeah. And these past... the past two generations and this generation is just a disappointment to, I would say, most PC enthusiasts out there. It just is.
The real problem with it is that it does take the place of getting another like amazing actual case, and this is what we get instead. If it was like, look at this thing we did, also we made this really awesome functional usable computer case that blows your mind, we'd probably be fine with that. And this would just be, this is what it is. This is like a one-off thing to be amused by. Only we're not getting a cool case. We're getting this stupid shape instead.
Yeah. And like, I was hoping, because again, we look forward to it every year. Computex is the big year for Inwin to put out this signature series case. Yeah. And I was hoping they would go back to what we knew from them as far as like looking like a case or looking like, you know, looking like something I'd want. And this is such a departure. I don't know who's in charge of this, but they just need to go.
Yeah, I think
or lay out the drugs.
Yeah, I thought it was like the bubble last year. I was like, oh, it can't get any worse than that. Yeah, it did.
No, last year was the Z Tower, the one that kind of looked like a piece of art as well.
Was it?
Yeah, and the year before the silver was the one. Bubble.
Oh, the bubble was the year before. Okay, yeah. I just got it mixed up then.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, though, like I said, the past 2 years, the Z Tower and the bubble thing. I don't need.
I mean, we even saw the Z Tower at CES. They brought it. It was not. It was not impressive.
The Z Tower was. It was almost 10,000, I think. These are 4,000. Like the other ones were like $1,000, and like for something that's limited edition, that was really something that nobody else had.
Yeah.
As an enthusiast, I would pay that if I really wanted it.
Yeah.
This, I'm never going to pay that much money. I'd go buy that EVGA board.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'd rather have the EVGA board with nothing on it hanging on my wall than looking at this thing all day.
Yeah, I agree. It's disappointing.
I was very disappointed. Maybe I'm more disappointed than most people, but I was very disappointed. But talking about something that's not a disappointment, we'll move on because we're going to cases now, is that Fantex showed their Entholux 2, which is their full tower big-ass case. Yeah. Did you review the Lux one?
I did most of them.
Yeah. So this is a massive case. This case can support pretty much anything. This case can support dual systems with a mini ATX and either full ATX if you want. Mm-hmm. Can support dual power supplies. Has tons of room for cooling. Has tons of room for SSDs. Has tons of room for hard drives. And one thing I really like about this case is like you can change a lot of the internals, but they include pretty much everything to do that. A lot of cases you have to buy that stuff extra. They include everything. Massive case, tons of cooling support, looks great, minimal RGB elements. The power supply cover has a slight RGB strip on it.
Yep.
But I really like that they haven't overdone it with RGBs. The really interesting thing about this case is it comes with a nine fan hub. Like it has everything. It's going to be $189.
I mean, I think that's in line with what the Lux was before.
But the reason they're able to do that is it doesn't come with any fans.
Oh.
Which I think makes sense, because if you're doing a big-ass build, right, you have a theme picked out.
Yeah,
you might have the fans that you want picked out. You're gonna redo all the
fans.
You pull
those stock fans out anyway, so.
Yeah. And if you're doing a big-ass build like this, you're going to replace all the fans.
Yeah.
You're just going to. One thing that's really interesting about this is that we've seen a lot of vertical GPU mounts. You can actually stack them in this. So there's a vertical GPU mount like that would sit horizontal, like that would sit in front of your normal PCI Express slots. Mm-hmm. Then there's one below it. So you could actually stack two graphics cards and just have that showing.
Mm.
Also, Fantex is making water cooling parts for this. They're in some of the photos in our article. Mm-hmm. So they'll slot right in and they'll mount to the case perfectly. So if you were going to do a full loop or something like that, Fantex already has the parts that will fit perfectly in this for you. So you don't have to worry about that. And they look pretty good too. This also supports the largest motherboards. So this will fit the EEB, so it will fit the Dominus board and the Gigabyte board if you planned on doing something crazy like that. This will support that as well.
Nice.
I like it. I think they've done the right thing because, again, you add three fans in there and this is over $200. They're keeping it under $200. So much in this. You get all the adapters to change things. Like you get the adapter for the ITX to put an ITX system in here. You get the vertical GPU adapters. You get like everything that comes with this for $189 bucks. I'm a huge fan of that.
It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, so very cool. Definitely one of the better case highlights from Computex. Another one that was announced at Computex is that NZXT has finally gone the the clear or the tempered glass front panel design. So they announced the H510 Elite. It's basically like the H510 except for, or the H500 except for, you have RGB fans and a tempered glass front panel that we've seen everybody do. Yeah. And you do get some cooling in there from the sides, but it's coming from the side again, and you're not going to get all that much.
No, your airflow is going to be limited. Yeah.
It's expected. But one thing I don't like about this case is that you only have room in the top for a single fan. Again, this is a mid-tower. This is not like a, but NZXT has done that to kind of cut costs and stuff, where it's like, I would rather have my radiator up top and have fans, you know.
I also don't like that the top of the case is like truly the top of the case. So
yeah,
any screws are just mounted straight through that top of it. There's no hiding anything there.
Yeah.
I actually think this is just getting kind of lazy and designless.
And it does have their smart, I don't know how many RGB fans it comes with. I forget. Two of their Air RGB2 fans, an RGB strip, and it comes with their smart device that tunes everything and does all that. At 116, this isn't a big case either. For 169, I feel it's kind of high. I guess you could say NZXT now does command a premium, maybe. Just because popularity.
For how long? It's the PC hardware market is fickle. If you're not innovating, like, you will be abandoned. So be careful with your high pricing if you're not doing anything new. This is, to me, there's nothing to see here.
Yeah. I just think that they want to, you know, we just did the Corsair case. That's the tempered glass. We did the fractal design, which was a big surprise.
Yeah.
And they want something that's, I wouldn't say this is affordable, but it's not you're still getting, and this is, again, this is only two tempered glass to the other side and your front. They want that look. They want the look that everybody's.
But why'd they have to do it on the same exact case they've already got? Do something new. Too. Like, this is boring.
And do something new and do something big. Yeah. Like, I want a big tower.
Yeah, seriously. What happened in NZXT? It used to be like the performance innovative go-to company. Honestly, as a company, the products they're putting out are disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Compared to what they used to do. So I don't know if
They're using like the same Air RGB. Well, it's like the 2.0 version, which has like, I guess, different lighting, but it's the same design.
Yeah.
And I have those fans in my case right now, and I look at them every day and I want to replace them because they're just like old looking.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, so
they've never had great fans, like great looking fans. They've always looked kind of meh.
They need a redesign for that.
Yeah.
So moving on to AIOs and the more interesting, we saw actually a lot of interesting stuff. We'll talk about a lot of it next week. But the one interesting thing is that Cooler Master showed off a dual pump AIO, which is called their Master Liquid ML240P Dual Mirage. Basically, it has a block, but then on top of that block are two pumps that work in tandem. Which the whole reasoning, you know, more you're pushing the coolant faster, so it cools.
No.
More?
No.
Yeah, I don't.
No. Just a whole lot of no. It doesn't. It doesn't go faster. None of the research I've ever looked at, dual pumps don't do that. It just creates redundancy in that if a pump fails, you have another pump working. There'd have to be something really special going on here for them to increase the flow by having two pumps. It's simple, like it's a train, like you can't add another something inside of that loop to make it like it's the restriction is there of the other pump, so like you can't push past that, so it's whatever the one does, the other does. So
yeah, the only one thing I do like about this, I kind of like the way it looks. Honestly, like, I think that looks cool as like a CPU cooler on top of my, at least for me,
yeah.
On top of, I do like the way it looks. One thing I don't like is that they're saying two pumps. Why isn't this a 360?
Yeah, and why isn't it? I find, well, I guess the orientation is that way for the RAM, right? But it just looks so big. Yeah.
I like that, though. That's just me. I like that look. I just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I guess might I as like well. We've done it. We've gone as small as we probably can. So, I mean, yeah, they can't make their pump any smaller than they already have because they, you know, the whole getting sued thing. they've had to really be careful with their pump design. So the dual chamber thing is kind of what they've stuck with, and you can only make that so small. I don't know. We'll see. I just have a feeling this is going to perform nearly identical to their 240 design from before. Or 280.
Yes.
That is a 240. It can't be. I know it says 240, but those fans look like 140s for sure.
Yeah. It says 240. Yeah. I don't know. But I would love to get... They have a regular 240, a 240 Mirage. I would like to see both of them put against each other and see a difference, because it would blow my mind if they release both and the dual one has the same performance. You would think they test that and be like, this is stupid.
That would blow my mind at all. Not. Yeah, no, sorry. I won't say here, but yeah. I would absolutely expect that, but
yeah. So I like the block. It's not even a block. It's just the pumps on top of a block.
Yeah, it's in the circulation.
I think that
area.
Looks cool. I think that looks cool to me. But besides that, we would have to test it, honestly, to see if there's any real difference. It's going to be around $200, which is a lot for a 240 mil AIO. So, moving to gaming kind of stuff, Asus actually put out this monitor, and I think it's like pretty awesome if you're a mobile gamer.
I agree.
You know, I have friends that bring like Xboxes and stuff to like when they travel, and the biggest thing is like portable monitors. We've had them, they're thin, we've had them for a long time, but they've never been great, like in any means. Like I've had portable monitors, and like to do anything on them, they just look like crap, they perform like crap. So Asus has put out a 17-inch gaming monitor, portable gaming monitor, that's 240 hertz, 1080p 17-inch display, 240 hertz refresh rate, 3ms response time. It basically looks like a big tablet. Mm-hmm. Which means you can fit it in your bag very easily.
It even comes with the little tablet flip thing.
Yeah, it comes with the smart cover. Which also acts as a stand, so you don't need, again, you don't need some stand, or there's not some crappy plastic stand that's going to break. You know, this, and at least most smart covers I have, like, they give you different like viewing angles too, like you can move it down a little bit, like it, you know. This takes HDMI or USB type C via DisplayPort, and it can also be powered by the same USB C DisplayPort cable. It also has an internal battery,
which is sweet.
Yeah, so you can get 3 hours of usage on the internal battery.
Is that at 240 hertz, or we don't know?
I don't know. Yeah. But I think this is great. Again, if you're a mobile gamer, you know, even like if you're playing like on a Switch, like maybe you don't want that little screen all the time.
Yeah.
You're traveling, you play the Switch on the plane, but when you get to the hotel or wherever you may be at, like you want to play on something a little bit bigger, you know? This is awesome, and like I said, it's 240 hertz, and it has a variable refresh rate, so you're not going to see any tearing or anything like that either. Yeah. This is like one of the most, like, yes, we needed this product from Computex, like we needed something like this.
Yeah, it'll come down to pricing. I want to say it needs to be below $300.
Yeah, it's 1080p, so I don't think it's going to be super expensive, but like this is the right direction. Mobile gaming is a thing.
This lets you hook your laptop up to it too. And like, this is a much better screen than your laptop probably. Well, not always, but the refresh rate, it lets you run dual monitors pretty easily. with your laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as you have the connection.
Yeah.
You can easily do that. And I love that it has the battery, which means like you don't need to find another plug. You can take this to the park and play games with your friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Use this to create content.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool thing. I love it. Yeah. No word on pricing, but again, one of the products that actually makes sense from Computex. So. And the last one is sort of, I don't want to call it gaming related because it's not gaming keyboards, but you know, we reviewed the SK621, SK630 from Cooler Master. I like them for typing and programming and things like that. I really like them. They're mechanical keyboards that have chiclet style, very low profile. Well, they're going even more low profile. They showed an SK851, which is a larger keyboard as far as like keyboard layout, but they're using Omron switches, and we know Omron switches for our mice. Almost every gaming mouse has an Omron switch, and I didn't even know Omron made key switches.
This is not their first switch.
I don't know.
Yeah, I had never heard of them building a key switch.
Yeah, so they have low profile mechanical key switches, which are much smaller or much shorter or not as tall. Yeah. As them. So the Omron switches are 7.4 millimeters, whereas the Cherry low profile switches are 18 millimeters. So these are very low profile. This is going to be a Bluetooth wireless, just like the SK621, full RGB backlighting. Now, I'm interested to see how these feel, because the big complaint, not complaint, but a lot of people wanted these keyboards to feel like a laptop keyboard, which uses scissor switches.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanical key switches don't feel like that. This looks like it would feel more like, just like the way the keys are designed from what I'm seeing from like, this photo.
Bounce the right way?
Yeah, I don't know. But I like it that again, Cooler Master is going even smaller. I love the look of these. These are prototypes. This is not like the final version. But I like it. I think it's cool. Omron is a name that's synonymous with mice. So we know at least in those switches they're good quality. Everybody uses them.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how a keyboard switch does and how it feels and all of that. Obviously we're just looking at pictures here, so we haven't used these. But the keyboard is going to be out in January of 2020, which means upcoming CES. It's going to be $169.99. So we'll see.
Yeah. It's kind of expensive. I like it. So I'd expect good things out of it.
Yeah, it's expensive. I think it's out of the two that are shown there. I guess they are the same size or no. One's a little bit larger.
Yeah.
I think it's the larger one. So you're getting a full number pad and you're getting a bunch of top keys that aren't really used for anything, at least in this prototype version. Yeah. So a lot of extra keys, a big keyboard. But they should be using that same aluminum top plate that looks beautiful too.
Since they don't have anything on those top keys, I'm expecting them no less than OLEDs on them that I can program within software to look like whatever I want them to look like.
Add another $100 on top of it, at least.
Well, I mean, specify. My expectations have risen. Yeah.
But I think it's cool. So that was one of the more I got pretty excited about this keyboard when I saw it. So that is Computex. We're almost at an hour and a half.
We're
pretty
An
hour and a half into this. We try to go through it quickly. Next week we will still have more Computex because I have like 15 more articles to write. So there's a lot. This show has seemed like there's a lot, and there's a lot from companies that you wouldn't expect. But again, when you do have a CPU launch and I guess a semi-GPU launch, I don't know what you want to call it, you are going to see a lot of things. And there's a lot of cases that we'll be talking about. And we didn't even talk about some of the laptop designs, which are pretty interesting as well. That we'll get into that stuff next week. So definitely stay tuned for next week. That'll be our final wrap up. But we try to get most of like the hardware stuff and some of the cool stuff we saw in this episode. So also next week, on top of Computex stuff, we have two products. We've taken a look at the Sith Muggin 5 Tough Gaming Alliance CPU cooler. If you're not familiar with the Tough Gaming Alliance, it is kind of what Asus started to put products through certain tests, so they're like certified, I guess you would say, to be called Tough Gaming Alliance. So Sith has their Muggin 5, which I believe we already reviewed, but this is the Tough Gaming Alliance version. It comes with an RGB fan as well as sort of like an RGB top cover. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting that none of their photos, I guess the last one, it is lit, but they use white lighting, so you can't kind of, like the first photo is like kind of a render, and like maybe it's not, I don't know, but and then you look at the other ones and you kind of confuse you. It is all lit. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So yeah, bad photos here, but we're expecting decent performance. I mean, Sith's been pretty good.
One of the best, actually.
And then I'll be taking a look at an M.2, not the, one of the new ones, because I don't have a Ryzen 3000 series part, and I don't have a X570 board.
At least does anybody? I don't think anybody does yet.
Yeah, no, because they're not coming out for a couple months. So I'll be taking a look at the ADATA XPG SX 6000 Pro PCI Express NVMe M.2 drive. Very fast. Where are the speeds on this thing? I can't find it. Actually, no, this is not the super fast one. This is the more affordable one. So this is their more affordable one. Read speeds of 2100 megabytes a second and write speeds of 1500 megabytes a second. You know, again, we're kind of seeing like we'll have the lower end that kind of gets you into this. So this is, again, going to be more, it's going to be faster than your typical SATA drive by at least two times.
Yeah.
So you're going to get that performance. Also, you're going to get the power savings and everything like that. And you're not going to have to mount a 3.5-inch drive anywhere. So we'll have that for you as well. You might have some other stuff. It all just depends. There's a lot of Computex news I got to get to. But this is the pro version, so it does come with a 5-year warranty too, which a lot of people kind of don't look at that stuff anymore for whatever reason. There's a big difference between having a 3-year warranty, which most drives come with, and a 5-year warranty. It's just two extra years. It's usually 5 years. Like as we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, 5 years is like kind of like when you do your whole upgrade thing. So making sure your drives are, you know, under warranty for that long is kind of important. So that brings us to the end of the podcast here. We talk about if we saw anything, did anything, you know, anything like that.
Oh, not really. Tech-wise, nope. I didn't do anything. Sorry. No geek stuff. I watched the end of Game of Thrones, and that's it. Are you just pissed? Traveling and... No, I mean...
A lot of people are pissed from what I saw. I mean... I have no clue what happened or anything like that.
I don't really see why to be mad at this one. Like, the whole season's just been disappointing, so... I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's just all you can say. Like, they didn't do it. They didn't do it justice, so whatever.
Yeah.
It's there.
I went on a little adventure with the girlfriend. Yeah. Saw some waterfalls and stuff. But I'm thinking about getting... I had been thinking about getting an action camera, and obviously I was going to get a GoPro Hero 7 Black, because that's the standard. But a couple weeks ago, DJI released their action camera. It's called the Osmo Action, and I've been researching it, and I'm kind of torn, honestly. Obviously, you know, we don't check out like action cameras on the site, but
no. We do like film and videography, though.
I know. And with my girlfriend, we film a lot of the places that we go and things like that. And I thought this would be perfect because, one, it does have a screen that you can see yourself, which is
just always been the, like, the, to me, that's always been the downfall of GoPro.
It's just like even with my Sony, when I'm shooting myself, like I have to set the shot and then go back and see if I'm in the shot. And like this just solves everything with that. So this has a front facing front-facing screen that you can see yourself. And I mean, everything I've seen from like their time lapse to their I don't know what they call it, but it's like they're super steady, like you don't need a gimbal with this type thing, you know?
Yeah.
Everything that I've seen on videos on YouTube, and I've been researching this, it's really good. And it's like, a lot of people said, if you have a Hero 7, there's no reason to upgrade to this. But if you don't, this is the one to get because it's above.
Slightly better.
It's far. Yeah, slightly better than the GoPro. So I'm kind of like, it's $350, which isn't, I don't think it's bad at all. And it's completely waterproof, up to 33 feet, like all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Actually, it's decent audio too. Not that I would use it all that, yeah, the audio all that much, but yeah, I mean, like,
mostly for B-roll stuff. Good,
yeah, but it's like a good, it's a good action camera that, like, if I want to shoot, and it shoots 4K 60, you know, like if my girlfriend and I are like at somewhere, but we want to like include it in one of our videos, I don't want to have to bring my big camera with the setup like into a restaurant, right? I can just bring that little thing that I can put in my pocket.
But then you don't get to show everybody that you're. I mean, they got us on a tour once.
It got you on
a tour? I got all of us on a brewery tour once, remember? We were in San Diego, yeah, and he set up the camera, and the guy's like, hey, this guy's a vlogger. I should probably give him a tour. So
yeah, that guy was super nice, by the way, when we did that. But yeah, I mean, it's just easy, and it's something for, like, you know, when I'm shooting, like, my girlfriend, she's just, like, walking around and kind of, like, waiting for me. Like, I could just give this to her. I don't have to worry about her breaking it because it's an action camera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she can just shoot stuff, and like she shoots, I have given her my like my big camera before, and like she shot stuff, so she knows what she's doing. If it's just super easy, you just turn it on and hit a button, boom, you know.
Yeah, there's uses like it, for them, for sure.
I do like it for time lapses, especially like time lapses in the rain and stuff, because I'm not going to take my nice camera out, like put it out in the rain, but I can leave that out in the rain to do a time lapse, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously too, it's like we go on certain trips where there are waterfalls and jumping in the you know, beach and all that, like we can, I can shoot more because I'm not going to bring my expensive camera under a waterfall to get wet. Like, you know, so yeah, that's what I've been thinking. I haven't decided yet, but I will be deciding here pretty soon on which one I'm going to get. Because we have some trips planned where we want to get wet. So
sounds like something you need.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been debating on. So that's yeah. But it's been, like I said, we're getting closer to, you know, an hour and 40 minutes here. So we're gonna go ahead and end the podcast here. If you made it this long, we appreciate you guys listening and staying with us through this whole long, very long podcast.
Yeah, but it's a Computex one. It's what we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, we have been waiting for. You know, so everything that we talked about, all the stuff with Computex, is listed in the show notes, and we have even more Computex stuff, and we have a big link at the top of the page that says Computex 2019, so you can click that and see all of the articles, and of course everything else that we talked about in the podcast is in the show notes as well. Well, I'm tired, man. So let's just close things out here, guys. We appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next week.